Hello and welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. I'm Viv Davis from CEPR. It's the 13th of July 2010 and I'm speaking to Stein Klassens, Assistant Director in the Research Department of the IMF and Professor of International Finance Policy at the University of Amsterdam. We discussed the recently published 12th Geneva Report on the World Economy, which Professor Klassens authored with Professor Richard Herring and Dirk Schoenmaker. The report is titled A Safer World Financial System, Improving the Resolution of Systemic Institutions. I began by asking Stein to explain why cross-border resolution is so important, yet at the same time is such a neglected part of banking regulatory policy and financial stability more generally.
Well, we were asked by Charles Piplas, who is the originator of this report, to look at supervision of international financial institutions. And quickly, when we put together the team, we realized that really we had to start from the end game. And in many ways, this is similar to what Raghu Rajan last week in his interview also at Vox stressed. You have to think about incentives, and incentives drive a lot in economics in general, but I think in the financial sector even more so. And when we think about incentives, we have to think about the number of players involved in the financial sector. So we have the institutions themselves, which of course have their owners and their managers and their creditors, but it's also about the regulators and supervisors. And if you think about these incentives that they face, of course it's about the money for the financial institutions and their creditors. And they like to know what in the end, if there were to be a problem, what is the end game? What are the potential haircuts that they might be facing, the losses that they might be facing, the managers, whether they may be changed or not. Applying the same kind of thinking to the regulators and supervisors, we have the same incentive problems. Regulators will collaborate with each other, and this is on the cross-border side, if they have some interest, some joint interest at stake. And I always found it very interesting that in spite of many agreements that have been signed among regulators, in the end, in the crisis itself, there was very little use made of these agreements, these so-called memorandums of understandings. Pretty much thrown to the in the waste basket, they also say that formally there's no legal binding concept to it. So the incentives are very important, and that is a lot of it is dictated by the end game. Where might you end up in this important state of the world? And besides the two parties, the institutions and the regulator, the system as a whole that also needs clarity. And we saw that very much in the crisis when people just didn't know where the system was going. And that created a lot of turmoil in the fall of 2008. And to some extent, we see a little bit of that in the crisis in the European context today, in the Euro context. Not knowing exactly where the system is going to go creates a turmoil. So working back from that, we realized that the end game is very important to address, but hadn't been addressed at all in the international context. And that's important because cross-border financial institutions, and the reports makes that very clear, through looking at the 30 largest institutions around the world, are very international these days. They have more than half of their assets abroad. They have many, many subsidiaries abroad. They operate in many countries around the world. And as a consequence, the end game has to be designed across all countries in a consistent manner. And unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, that hasn't been done yet, although the Basel Committee has acknowledged this problem for some time. They haven't been able to get a consensus on it. They have just come up with a working group on it, with a report. The other parties are involved as well. But we did feel that the conceptual and empirical basis for some of that was not full yet. And so we hope to contribute to that debate through this report.
Okay. The report identifies what you refer to as a trilemma of preserving national regulatory authority, fostering cross-border financial integration, and maintaining global financial stability. Could you explain a bit more about what you mean by this?
Well, because national authorities have really a tendency to focus on their national domestic financial system, and that's perfectly understandable. Because they are mandated by national agencies, by national laws, by their taxpayers to look at the national interest foremost. So when it comes down to potential failure of large financial institutions that crosses many borders, they tend to ignore the wider aspects. They tend to ignore the global dimensions of the externality, so to speak. And then that means that you basically end up with a coordination failure, and people have modeled this in a very rigorous way, Xavier Freycutt, among others, of how you can get this kind of prisoner's dilemma where the national authority, each of which look at their own interests, don't recapitalize or support an institution that is sufficiently at risk. As a consequence, the overall interests are suffering. We call this a financial trilemma in the sense that there's a conflict between three policy objectives. On one hand, you want to preserve national autonomy, so sovereignty in the fiscal or monetary sense. At the same time, you do want to foster cross-border banking because we realize the gains from an integrated financial system. And you want to maintain global financial stability. Those three objectives are not consistent unless you kind of give up on one or the other. It's very similar to the trilemma that we know in open macroeconomy of monetary policy, exchange rates, and fiscal independence. Similarly, we have a trilemma here. So what it means, you have to give up on one of those. Now, countries haven't done that always, and that we saw in the crisis very much, both in a general sense, and that's referring back to this problem of the large turmoil and the uncertainty. If we go back to the crisis, the governments had to come in at the last minute with massive amounts of support, amounting, according to Andrew Haldane and a number of others, to about 25% of world GDP. In contingent liabilities was put on the table to save these cross-border banks. But that was a last-minute resort to prevent a complete collapse. But what it showed is that we hadn't thought through how to deal with these institutions beforehand. In the report, we go through a number of individual cases that kind of illustrate this more general problem. So we discuss the failure of Fortis, which was a coordination failure between the Dutch and the Belgian governments, where in the end the solution was pretty much along national lines, and I think there would have been a better solution out there that would have saved some more going concern value for the entity and prevented some turmoil. We look at other cases. Iceland has a number of banks that went into trouble, of course, but that had repercussions for the Netherlands and the UK, and that was a clear case in which it really became everybody for their own kind of solution, trying to preserve assets in the UK that were of the Icelandic banks. So these problems are severe and are real, and the Lehman is really the one that in some sense broke the system, where not having a good cross-border resolution framework created a lot of turmoil, as we know, in the fall of 2008. And it really was in that one weekend where we realized that between the UK and the US, which are otherwise very integrated financial systems with a lot of huge capital flows, we lacked the legal system, the institutional system, to deal with a failure, which at that point was still not a very large institution. Lehman was not a major player, but nevertheless created enough havoc to let all these other turmoils. Having said that, the paper also looks at a number of cases where we've had more success and more cooperative solutions. Dexia between Belgium, France, and Luxembourg was a more favorable outcome. We've had the operations of a number of Western banks in Eastern and Central Europe that were dealt with in a fairly cooperative and coordinated fashion. So it doesn't always have to be a problem, but I think what the report is saying, we don't want to face the turmoil that we have seen before, and particularly what we don't want to have is the situation in which these large institutions, these large systemic importantly financial institutions, kind of bank on the state, so to speak. They take risks, they become very complicated and complex with many subsidiaries, and as a consequence they become too complicated to unwind, to break down and to preserve in a reasonable fashion. And there's nothing left but for governments to come in and bail them out, so to speak, in a large amount. So we need to have these solutions addressed beforehand, and that's what the report tries to contribute to.
I can imagine that countries that are already somewhat integrated financially, such as the Eurozone countries, for example, may find this level of cooperation relatively easier than countries that are less integrated with others. Do you think in this respect that all countries should be adopting the same or similar solutions?
The report doesn't have, and it would be very pretentious to say so, precise solutions for specific countries. But it does sketch out what kind of solutions are consistent, and that goes back to the trilemma. The trilemma gives us a conceptual framework, the case studies back that up, as to what are approaches that can work for a country or for a group of countries in a consistent manner. So the three that we go through are what we call the territorial approach, the second is the universal approach, and the last one is the modified universal approach. The first one, the territorial approach, we're short on, because the territorial approach, as kind of the name suggests, really means that you end up with a kind of a closed system in which you only support your local institutions. You have them required to have them local capital and local liquidity and the like. And that way you preserve, of course, national sovereignty and national authority, but you're impeding cross-border banking. In my mind, what we do is in some sense go back to models that we had before the European integrated markets or before the U.S. deregulated its financial system some 30 years ago, where you had kind of unit banking systems, very localized systems, very limited risk sharing, very limited economies of scale and scope across regions or countries. And I don't think we want to go that way for a number of reasons, and for that reason the report rejects the territorial approach. It also acknowledges, however, that the other extreme of the spectrum is the universal approach. It's probably not applicable to many countries either. Universal approach means that you pool all assets in a bank that runs into trouble in case of a bankruptcy or restructuring into a single estate, from which you then reimburse the creditors and others. That, in the legal construct, is a very extreme situation of having a universality. It can be applied in different ways. But nevertheless, the bottom line of that approach is that you need a very integrated market to begin with. We think the European Union is close to that, and many of the discussions in Brussels, as well as at the ECB and elsewhere, are pointing towards this as the final model. It would be a model with a single integrated supervisor, maybe with even a bank restructuring agency. It would also be a model in which the burden sharing, to the extent it's necessary for the resolution, the unwinding of a big institution, would have to be shared among many countries, the countries participating. And that is probably the most difficult of all considerations. But at the same time, the European Union wants to integrate. That's the single market program, and it doesn't want to go back on that. So we think there's a lot of potential for this universal approach within the European context. For other countries, we tend to be a little bit more agnostic in some sense and saying, well, it's too much to ask them to integrate completely, also on the fiscal and the side, so the burden sharing is probably not going to be done. So we propose a modified universal approach, where we start really from the national level in terms of resolution approaches, and we really stress that many countries can improve their resolution mechanisms, having better legal systems in place, better information in place, better tools for addressing large institutions. Important among those, we consider so-called contingent capital, capital that becomes effective, and I think Rago talked about it quite a bit last week in his interview, of how you can have the market work together with the regulators to create triggers that kind of soften the blow if there is a shock to the system, so that its capital becomes more easily available or even automatically. We think that's an important component. Another important component is more rules-bound regulations, where there's less forbearance, less willingness of the regulators to see how it goes, but more requirement on the regulators to intervene at an early point in time in an institution to mitigate any kind of final problems. So working at the national level is important in this modified universal approach, But beyond that, we think at the international level there can be clear responsibilities and assignments of who takes care in case of a cross-border problem. If you go back to the international agreements, the one that is most relevant is the Basel Agreement on Home Host Supervision, which sets out the responsibilities for who takes care of supervision of a subsidiary abroad and a branch in a certain countries. And that home host principle has worked quite well, but it has never really addressed resolution. Who would in the end be responsible if there were to be a problem, and who would have to in some sense pay for it? So what we propose is a concordat, and it has been proposed by others as well, that would assign responsibilities explicitly to the home or host supervisor, put in place sanctions for if the other party does not live up to its responsibilities, and in that way clarify where the responsibilities lie, and that way also create more incentives for collaboration among the supervisors. It's in the end, if you have shared resources, money at stake, so to speak, I think you will be more generally interested in collaborating among each other. So that concordat is the last piece of it. It can be complemented by many things that, again, that are underway. There is a lot of discussions on and actions in terms of better supervising these large institutions, the so-called colleges of supervisors, which have been put together that between countries monitor these large institutions. There have been a lot of talk about so-called resolution plans, or sometimes called living will, where institutions are being asked to tell the regulator, okay, how can you unwind yourself in case you run into trouble? Combined with this concordat, I think we have a good chance for those countries that are not willing to completely integrate, willing to go for the universal approach, but to nevertheless improve the system and reduce the stress that we have seen in the past crisis.
Yeah. The new concordat that you refer to, does this suggest a transfer of powers that will require a more centralized authority? And if so, do you think it's realistic to expect countries to accept something which they may consider to be politically contentious?
That is a deep question, and I agree that many of these questions go back to a political question as to whether you're willing to transfer some degree of sovereignty. Like I said, at the European level, the question is being faced today with more on the pure sovereign side as to how you deal with countries like Greece and others that facing fiscal difficulties. I think we have to face that same question on the banking side if you want to prevent the system going forward the same way. I think what the concordat is a slightly lighter form of it, and it works more with sticks and carrots. So countries can sign up for it. If they don't end up participating, then the other party has the ability to start taking measures like preventing that country from expanding into the other country, or imposing certain limits on the operations of the banks that operate in this other country. On that basis, there's more of a stick and carrot approach that I think can be quite successful. Yeah.
I wondered if you consider the concept of recovery as opposed to resolution. Does that feature at all in your work? I mean, recovery in the sense of what you do before you get to the end game.
Very much so. So anything you can do to prevent getting to the end game is obviously better, because there's a lot of value lost in the end game, going concern value, so to speak. So the more we can do to prevent that, and also importantly, the more we can do to incentivize parties to limit their risky behavior that get us to that point. So this goes back to the incentives on both bank managers, owners, creditors, as well as supervisors, so that they're better able to and willing to intervene at an earlier stage. The contingent capital is an important component of that, but it's not the only one that we do. And then if it nevertheless were to come to that phase, the recovery can be facilitated a lot if the institution simplifies their operations. One of the issues that we stress in the report is how many of these large institutions have legal structures that don't correspond to business structures. So an example is that you operate in one country as a bank, but your treasury is in another country. So legally you're separated, or importantly for its information. a lot of the IT structure resides often centralized, but is used by many of these subsidiaries around the world. Untangling that information flow in bankruptcy, as we've seen in the case of Lehman, is a nightmare. And even today, people saying it can take another 10 years before we can finally settle some of the aspects of the Lehman, because the information has to be released by parties that are either bankrupt or that may be operating solvently, but are not able or willing legally to share that information back to the bankruptcy estate. So these are things that can be done to simplify in the early stage and facilitate in the recovery if it ever were to come to the end game.
I wonder to what extent your ideas in the report align with current thinking amongst the financial stability boards. Are they heading in the same direction?
The most closely work is with the Basel Group on cross-border resolution, which came out with a report in 2010. They very much stressed the need to improve the national resolution regimes, and they are coming up with recommendations as to what that would entail. We have seen progress there. In the UK, we had a special resolution regime adopted following the Northern Rock problems. In the US, there's legislation in progress now that will improve resolution. In some other countries, it's a little slower. We would like to see more progress, I think. But nevertheless, that for the FSB has been one of the core recommendations of going forward. On the cross-border side, per se, the trilemma has held them back as well, because they realized that the cross-border sharing of fiscal resources in case of crisis, the cross-border financing of a resolution, is a very difficult and charged issue. So in that sense, the FSB has to tread more carefully.
Thanks. Stein, before we wrap up, I just wondered if you could explain what you think are the costs of not addressing this issue of improving the resolution of SIFIs.
It's hard with any of these questions to be too definitive, in part since it's hypothetical. At least I hope that we don't have to answer this if you don't address this issue. But it's also importantly because it's difficult to answer because we lack good empirical facts and analytical tools on many financial sector issues, including on this one. So I have some trepidation and quite a bit of caveat as to how to answer this. But now that I think conceptually, I would think of three types of costs. One, for the financial institutions themselves, they do operate in a complex way, in part for the wrong reasons. We would argue that too complex to fail is an incentive for them to become more complex. But I think also sometimes they react to the current regulatory structures, including the cross-border part. And that they organize in that sense themselves inefficiently, and have to operate more costly. It's a hidden cost that translates into higher spreads and margins and what have you. But it's inconsistent with the concept of an integrated financial market, and regional approaches like in the European Union elsewhere would really try to minimize this to begin with. So I think that's one cost if we don't address this issue. Second, and the report is very strong on the end game in many ways, but one of the end games that it also highlights is that if you don't have this cross-border resolution worked out, the incentives for supervisors to collaborate are simply not there in the next round to send. They won't share information, for example, beforehand, and we saw that in the crisis as well. It's very understandable on one end. I mean, if an institution has an operation in my country that I see is becoming weaker, what my incentives will be is to withhold information from the other party. Information is power, and information in this case is really money. And by withholding information and maybe requiring actually my local subsidiary to have more capital, more liquidity, I strengthen my own local operations, but I weaken the rest of the system. So I end up with a worse solution, but it's a very logical one if you don't have a common burden sharing, common cross-border framework. So I see that as a big cost as well going forward on the incentive side. And thirdly, I call this a political economy cost. In the sense, we would like to have integrated financial markets. We have seen many of the gains from that around the world. And I'm fearful that following the crisis, we already have seen quite a bit more national pressures. We've seen, obviously, quite a lot of interventions by national governments in institutions, with sometimes the tendency of politicians to say, well, let's make sure the money is used only for local purposes and for local taxpayers, etc. This is understandable. But since that pressure is there, if we don't tackle it now through better cross-border resolution, I'm afraid that we may actually increase that pressure and come up with more nationalized systems. So put differently, that we would have a tendency for the supervisor to look after its own local interests, look after its own regulations, and not create a global system that works for everybody. So, and that's a big problem for the financial sector. There's a lot of vested interests to begin with. So we would want to prevent this kind of dynamics from going forward.
Stein, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us today. It's been a pleasure.
You're very welcome. Thank you.